Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, my first guest today has many strings to her bow, as they say, but first and foremost, she says she was born an edgewalker. And I was really curious what that meant. I know that in ancient cultures, people look at call shamans edgewalkers because they walk between the invisible world and the visible world and bring back that from the invisible world, they bring back all this wisdom. So, Patricia Varley is my guest, and she's an international speaker, trainer, retreat and workshop facilitator, and professional edgewalker. So we're going to talk to her in just a few minutes and learn how that we can take some of those skills and apply them to us to help us get through today's uncertain times, because it is an uncertain world out there. And coming up later in the show, about 12:45, we'll be talking with, and I'm going to apologize in advance because I do not know how to pronounce her name. I'm going to say it's Jehan Wake. She is a graduate from Oxford. She's always been really interested in history, and she's written an incredible history book. Not boring, so don't fall asleep on that one. It's been described as a real-life Jane Austen story, and she follows the story of the fabulous Canton sisters, who were the first American heiresses to take Europe by storm. They traveled from their Maryland home across the Atlantic and into the hearts of the British aristocracy, and they did exceptionally well, and they broke the mold of what women were thought to be during those times. So I'm looking forward to talking to Jehan Wake about Sisters of Fortune later on in the show. But first of all, I want to take a couple of minutes. You know, Eric Ryder is with us every week. He's an integral part of our show. And I always thank him before, you know, after we chit-chat before the show and after. But I wanted just to bring him on today, and I was going to make time at the end of the show. And then I thought, no, Vicki, because you get carried away when you, when you're talking with people and you want to get as much information out of them as possible. And I nearly always end up running short on time. So let's do, you know, first things first, what's important up front. And just say thanks, Eric, for everything you do every week.
Oh, thank you very much. Really, it's always a pleasure.
And we could not do this, obviously, without you.
Well, likewise.
Now, you're going away, what, in a week or two?
Yeah, next week I'm going to head off to New York for a few days.
So, and you're not taking me with you?
Well, you're welcome to come.
I love New York, especially at this time of the year.
Yeah, I hear it's a lot warmer than it's been here. So I'm looking forward to a little bit of that humidity, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I have a good friend who moved from Seattle back to New York. She lived in Seattle for about 15 years, I think, and she moved back to New York in August. And we Skype every couple of weeks together. Mm-hmm. And one time we Skype and she's like, oh, it's been in the 80s. And then this week it was back down in the 30s or last week. So it's all over the place.
Maybe I'll get lucky. I hope I'll get lucky.
But what are you going to do out there?
Well, I'm going to, hopefully I'll be able to see The Late Show with David Letterman live in person. I got a call this morning about tickets and they haven't called me back yet. So kind of on pins and needles, hoping that that'll come through. But also going to see a show at Radio City Music Hall, one of my favorite bands from your part of the world, actually. Pulp is coming over to the U.S.
Okay.
And they're going to be playing Radio City Music Hall. And I've got friends over in New York, so it seemed like a logical place to go see them and visit the friends and two birds, one stone sort of thing. But, you know, a lot more fun than actually killing a bird.
Well, I hope so. So, yeah, that sounds like fun. You know, I did not, I was not a Letterman fan until I went to New York.
Oh, yeah?
I was a Leno fan. And then I went to New York and I don't know what, but I came back and I wanted to watch Letterman all the time instead.
Yeah, he's definitely very New York centric. So I think it's perfect if you have a trip to New York to try and see him live in person.
Yeah. Well, I hope you have a fabulous, fabulous time. And we're going to get our guest on the line in just a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, I want to let listeners know about a great film that is coming to Seattle. And it is coming, let me tell you right, it's coming Friday, April 6th through, I think it's through Sunday, April. Yeah, definitely through Sunday. Well, no, it's Thursday, April 12th. Let me get this right, the days here. But bottom line, it's called, they call it Myanmar, Lifting the Curtain. And if you like to travel and you like to learn about new cultures and different cultures, this is a really stunning film. This guy is a novelist. He's a best-selling novelist. He's a professor and a filmmaker, Robert H. Lieberman. And he's done this very surreptitiously. He had to go to Burma or Myanmar 5 times and film in secret, because they're not allowed to film on the streets.
Right, right.
And so he's taken a very broad perspective of Myanmar and what it's like for the Burmese people there. You know, things probably have changed a little bit politically since he cut the film.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really good film, and I'm going to be talking with the filmmakers maybe next week, maybe the week after. But I wanted to let listeners know that the film is going to be here this weekend, this coming weekend, through the 12th, April 12th. And mm-hmm. also, they'll have special appearances with the producer, Deborah Horde, and a director, Robert H. Lieberman, will also appear in person on Wednesday and Thursday, April 11th and 12th. So you've got the location there. I wonder if you'd share that with our listeners for us.
I do. It's going to be showing at the Metro Cinemas, which is one of the Landmark cinemas. So if you want more information on this, you can go to landmarktheaters.com. But the address for Metro Cinemas is 4500 9th Avenue Northeast in Seattle.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Thanks so much. And we have our guest on the line. Patricia Varley is waiting to join us right now. So we're going to cut to a break very quickly, and we'll be right back with you. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Patricia Varley. She's an international speaker, trainer, retreat and workshop facilitator. She's an author and business and personal coach focusing on integrating professional, personal and spiritual growth. She's a certified Edgewalker facilitator, coach and seminar leader, and guides and supports others in transitioning between mainstream business culture and what's evolving on the planet at this transformative time in history. I'm going to bring Patricia Varley on, and we'll learn a lot more about her background and what this means to us today. Patricia Varley, welcome.
Thank you so much, Vicki. It's great to be on the show today, and hello to your listeners as well.
Yeah, and you're calling in from somewhere wonderful, from Hawaii. So,
yeah, right now I'm on the island of Kauai and going to be going over to Maui tomorrow. But yes, it's a nice place to be part of the year.
Well, I want to look at your background and how you got to where you were, but I just want to get this out of the way first, because you say, I was born an edge walker, a paradigm pioneer. So I want to just define what we mean up front by edge walker.
Sure. Well, the term, I need to give her some credit. A very dear colleague and friend of mine I've known for 20 years, Dr. Judy Neal, actually was a pioneer in the spirit at work movement. And spirituality and heart-centered ethical leadership in business is something that I've been passionate about for 20 years as a coach. And I've had my own business as a speaker for quite some time. So I've known Judy for a long time. And in 2008, she wrote and had the book published called Edgewalkers, and it's about people and organizations that take risks, break ground, and build bridges. And as she was creating and you know, designing this book, I said to her, oh, my God, that I feel like I've been an edgewalker all my life. And she has as well, which is why she wrote the book. She was really guided to come up with this term. And what I mean, Vicki, by edgewalker is it's almost like someone who walks and lives on the edge. So it could be the glass half full people, very often the people who are ahead of the wave, ahead of the curve, who are thinking out of the box and maybe coming up with ideas where maybe people in mainstream would say, you're crazy, you know, you can't do that. It's really, I call myself, when I was a mastermind group many years ago, a paradigm pioneer, because I've always felt that I've had a sense of the future, of trends, of business practices that were what people would call at the time unacceptable. So, for example, back in the late 80s, or early 90s, I really had this passion for integrating not religion, so I want to be really clear about that with your listeners, but what I call spiritual, heart essence, higher purpose, more of an authentic place of bringing, integrating spiritual, personal, and professional growth. And I can remember back in 88 and 89 and 90, people said, you can't talk about heart and business. They don't belong in the same room. And as an edge walker, I said, well, somebody has to do it. Watch me. So
right.
There's a level of calling and purpose, and very often edge walkers are kind of like a modern-day shaman, and they often will bring a different level of awareness, ideas, solutions, will, with a lot of courage and often being very misunderstood, will, in a sense, bring a new way of thinking to even a problem. And I love the quote by Albert Einstein, and he said, we cannot solve our problems at the level of consciousness in which we created them.
Right.
And that's a real edgewalker quote. It's accessing information from much more from intuition than maybe logic, thinking out of the box, and that's, in a sense, what an edgewalker is. So I hope that brings some light to the term.
It definitely does. And I actually have Walk to the Edge and some other stuff on one of my favorite mugs. And people have actually looked at that Walk to the Edge line and said, well, that's a little dangerous, isn't it? It's not without risks, as you will get into in just a moment. But I think that was a great explanation there of what a modern day edge walker is. So I wanted to look just a little bit back at your background, because your educational background really reflected the integration of your two strong passions. You have a BA in psychology, sociology, and anthropology, and a master's degree in business and organizational development. So tell me how you put all that together to figure out how you are going to walk your own path.
Well, I think that we're all holistic human beings. We have our human personality, and you know, the thing that makes us unique. We all have, most of us have some level of a professional purpose, maybe our work we do in the world, whatever that may look like, and whether we're a leader or we're even leading our family, if we're a mom or, you know, whatever it would be. So I've always felt that my role or my, you know, in a sense, my passion and my work is to be a bridge between what I call that which makes human behavior and also organizational behavior, because I work a lot with groups and organizations and companies, you know, with maybe business culture as well as individual, let's say, entrepreneurs or leaders, but bringing their sense of individual, unique human behavior and personality, what makes them tick, and integrate that into the work that they're passionate about or help them find the work that they're passionate about. You know, sometimes people don't even know that. And I think I think that what I have found is that, you know, a lot of people say, well, I want to write a professional mission statement for my business. But I also think having a personal sense of clarity about who we are, and the more it's in alignment with our professional mission, the easier our life is. We're more congruent.
Right. And I read that you said in an article, before you could effectively offer your idea of transformative business from the heart, that you had to trust that you'd find and become the person that you were born to be. And your journey of discovery, you say, involved traveling, expanding your network, reclaiming your wholeness, and letting go of your limiting beliefs that kept you from being your authentic self. So tell me a little about some of the limiting beliefs that you may have been holding on that you had to let go of.
Absolutely. Well, I think part of my limiting belief is that a part of me thought I was a little crazy because of how...
Are we all? You know, come on.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, how can you do this? So I think that, you know, I did a lot of keynote speaking. I still do a lot of... Now I do tend to do more retreats and group facilitation, but I still do keynote speaking. But way back when I started, a part of me... in a way, I almost felt like an imposter. And I see this a lot with women. I work a lot with women, but not that men don't have this too, but where I would, though I believed, you know, I was confident about what I was speaking about, part of me didn't completely own my own success or my own message. I believed it, but there was a level of, well, you know, people would say, wow, that was really terrific. And I would sort of diminish, oh, it's okay. You know, it really wasn't me. And part of the limitation was a voice in my head said, well, who are you to get out there and be that powerful or that impactful? And I think the times that we're in are asking us, and I know my own journey, it's been an unraveling. It's been more of an undoing of that which is not who I am to reveal that which is who I am. And what I mean by that is the limitation that maybe said, who are you to be so powerful? Or maybe I'm not enough. Or... you know, when I first started speaking, I was more concerned with, do you like me and am I okay, versus what am I here to contribute to your growth? And the shift for a lot of people in limitations is stepping out of the human personality that says, am I okay, to what I call our essence or our spirit. This is where the spiritual part that comes in that says, I'm here to make a difference. I'm here to serve. So it comes. The shift for me was about maybe feeling more like I was surviving or maybe wasn't really enough, to a place of empowerment and what I call contribution, coming from a place that I have a unique message and a way of delivering it that nobody else can, that really could make a difference and serve other people. So it was less about my maybe wounded ego and personality and more about my essence and my spirit and making a difference.
Interesting. You say your philosophy is that we reinvent success from the inside out. And I know that you took some time off. You went to Naples to live and you got heavily invested in yoga, working from the inside out. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, interesting. It's Hawaii that did a lot more inside out than Naples. I did live in Florida for 30 years and 10 plus years in Naples. I've been done yoga and been on my own spiritual path. I've been a seeker since I've been a teenager, but I've been really doing a lot of this inner work for 30 years. And as a result of my own, you know, and transformation, as we know, is a journey. I don't think we ever really arrive. I think it's a life process where mm-hmm. we continue to emerge. And I think that's part of what we all have to remember. It's a journey, not necessarily a destination, but But when I came to Hawaii in 2007, I mean, this is the place that really slowed me down. You know, I'm originally from New York, so I've got that kind of East Coast, nothing against it, but accomplishing the human doing versus the human being, that we define ourselves by what we do and not who we are. So a lot of the reinventing success from the inside out is reclaiming for myself and my own journey, but also what I help other people do, you know, whether it's leaders or women or entrepreneurs, is to reclaim that which we might disconnect from as we're out there being human doing, being a human doing, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
And we in a sense, disconnect from a deeper essence. So it's a reinvention from the inside out. And a lot of our Western world is about defining ourselves by the outside in.
Yeah. And I think when we truly, truly understand what we mean by life is a journey, I think once we truly embrace that, life becomes easier.
Well, it does. We're more accepting of it. We're less, I think a lot of people are very hard on themselves. Like, oh, for example, I hear people say I'm 40 or I'm 50 and I don't have this level of accomplishment, or I'm not married, I don't have this much money. And it's who we are is not, yes, our outer accomplishments in a sense or an expression of our creativity and what we do, but our true worth, really the freedom in that comes from within. It comes from knowing that no matter what we do on the outside, we still have worth and value and importance, and that we're lovable and that we do make a difference just by being the unique individual that we are.
Right.
And many people forget that. So we overcompensate it by being either workaholics or running around, or I call it activity without accomplishment, and either having burnout or out of balance or bad relationships. You know, we forget our essence. And that's why I feel that the success from the inside out is about reclaiming the essence, which many of us have forgotten about, but has always been there.
Right. Well, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about integrity and integration. We're talking today with Patricia Varley, certified Edge Walker facilitator, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Proud to bring variety to your radio dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Patricia Varley. And we're talking about edge walking. And Patricia, this is something that she has embraced for a long time. And I wanted to talk a little, Patricia, about integrity and integration. I don't have any issue with integrity at all. But the integration part of things I find sometimes very difficult to truly integrate who you are into everything you do because of the kind of work that I do and some of the groups and organizations I work with. And I'm sure this is something that many people have an issue with. So let's talk a little bit about what you mean by integrity and integration.
Well, I think it's really important not only to be in integrity with our, you know, our actions and our words lining up, communicating clearly, speaking our truth, even if sometimes if it makes other people uncomfortable, And I think, you know, if we all look at the world, there's been, unfortunately, a lack of integrity a lot. So I feel it's something that is being called for all of us to step up and be truthful right. about who we are. So I would first, just quickly speaking about integrity, is to be very, when we look in the mirror, to have integrity with ourselves. And we know, most of us will know if we're honest, whether or not we're being truthful with our words, with our actions, with really being a model for walking and aligning our walk and our talk. But in integration, what's interesting, you said, you know, to bring who you are to what you do. The interesting thing is we always bring who we are to what we do. It's not like we're never not doing that. But when you, because you can't not bring you to what you do.
Absolutely,
but when
yeah.
we bring, but I know it sounds funny, but Vicky, but when we bring integrity into integration, it means showing up maybe more authentically, more, maybe even more real. Not that we're not being real, but with a deeper level of truth with ourselves. Like you had mentioned at one point when we were speaking earlier about compartmentalizing. And what a lot of people do is they say, okay, over here is my personality, over here are my feelings and my heart, over here is my work and my money, and over here is my relationships. Now, granted, when we put on our business suits, let's say, and go into work, we may not be talking about our personal relationships. However, you can go into the boardroom with your heart open, and you don't even have to tell anybody. So, in other words, I think people often will turn off, and this is the whole spirit and business thing, we will turn off maybe a deeper sense of passion, a deeper sense of self-awareness, maybe our intuitive knowing, our feelings about something. And yes, we need to maybe sometimes in business access our intellect more, okay? And yet, integration might look like, am I having human compassion in the workplace to my fellow workers? Am I accessing my intuition when I have to make a decision around my business? Am I, you know, it's more of a holistic model of where it's more of our inner being is showing up in every area of our life, even though our outer task, let's say, mm-hmm. could be raking the yard or going to work or having dinner with your spouse. You see what I mean? If we're more
yeah.
aligned with our essence, with, okay, with the truth of who we are across the board, our life is more like a flow. We're not as disconnected. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I think sometimes it's, you know, and I'm talking purely from a practical, you know, we got to make money kind of situation here. I think for some people it's hard to, they have to kind of tone down beliefs or behaviors or philosophies when they work with certain kinds of organizations or take on certain kinds of projects. And maybe it's just a case of being much more selective with the projects and jobs that we do take on. Because I think that's where a lot of the compartmentalization over the years, I'm not necessarily talking about so much now, but, you know, in the past has occurred for me. I had to really adapt me to fit into a certain kind of organization, for example.
Well, that's partly true. I think that we have a client or we go into an organization, excuse me, there is a level of wanting to meet them where they're at. However, I know with a lot of the work that I do, I hold the space that, let's say, leaders or a group can even expand beyond where they're at. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't need me, let's say, in coaching. So an edgewalker, what I often do is say, you know, I'm not going to push you in the deep end of the pool, but we're going to wade in together to a deeper place to be more authentic, more communicative, have more compassion in the workplace. And what's interesting you said is about making money is that when we don't have integrity, I mean, look at our financial world. It
right,
falls apart.
Right.
So this mindset of I got to make money without the compassion, without the heart, without the higher purpose, without a deeper sense of integrity actually doesn't sustain. I'm actually talking about a sustainable model that integrates integrity, integrates the old golden rule, you know, do unto others, integrates respect for each other and alignment with our values, personal values and professional values. That will sustain financially. And it's so opposite of how we've been building our financial world. But look at what's happening. It's not working.
Right.
And that's why bringing in integration is key right now. And this is an edge. This is an edgewalker thing, but it's absolutely needed, I think.
I would agree. I think a lot of companies give lip service to, you know, we want you to have work-life balance, or, you know, we want you to have values that are aligned with us. I think there's a lot of lip service given to that. And I think what you're talking about is very much needed. So you we talked a little bit about how Edgewalkers are the first people to volunteer to head up a new business, maybe to lead a cross-company initiative. They think outside the box, seek out new solutions. What are some of the risks to being an Edgewalker in today's culture?
Well, besides the fact that sometimes people think you're crazy, you know, it's like you can't talk about that. And I think some of the risks are it can make people uncomfortable. I mean, it takes a lot of courage and a lot of commitment and a lot of strength to be an Edgewalker because you're often not accepted. And, you know, you don't fit into the mold. You're maybe more of a chief than an Indian in the sense of putting out ideas that you'll get resistance. So there's a level of sometimes, I find that my why, and I know a lot of Edgewalker people, we're a bit out of the mold, but this, our sense of why we're called to do what we do, our deeper sense of commitment and conviction, in a sense, almost needs to be stronger or get stronger because the acceptance from the outside world, because we're normally a smaller percentage, is not always there. So it involves a sense of taking a leap. There's a lot of faith involved, going on your gut instincts, going on sensing a future or maybe a solution to something that hasn't actually happened. And I'll give you an example. Back 20 years ago, I went to a career counselor just to do some assessments about, all right, what would be next for me? And she actually came back, you know, I did all these assessment tools and said, you don't fit into a category. And I said, well, that explains a lot. And she goes, whatever you're going to do. Yeah, I was the blessing and the curse. So that's what sometimes an edgewalker is. She goes, there can be a level of confusion. But she said, whatever you're going to do doesn't really exist yet. And yet, if you look at the Albert Einstein quote, we can't solve our problems at the level of consciousness we created them. Part of the risk and the sometimes challenges, sometimes what's being asked of us, particularly in these times of unbelievable change, we haven't even created yet. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? There hasn't even, it's like, you know, Christopher Columbus going out thinking he's going to sail off the end of the earth. He took a huge risk finding out the earth was actually round.
Didn't
he? That kind of thinking. But imagine, you know, it's that kind of pioneering. So the risk is you could fail. The risk is maybe you'll go and it won't be accepted. Or the risk is, you know, it's actually we might grow. And growth sometimes makes people, including an edgewalker, uncomfortable because it means, like, I have to continually let go of my old ideas of how I think things need to be. I'm constantly asked as I go up my own spiral of evolution to let go or to bring along that which works, but also to let go of that which no longer serves me or even serves the workplace.
Right, right. It's all about expansion.
Expansion and surrender in that expansion and not getting overly attached and yet reinforcing and identifying that which is actually working. So it's a process.
Yes. I want to talk about this. The five Edgewalker qualities include self-awareness, passion, integrity, vision, and playfulness. And I want to particularly talk about playfulness. I was watching, I don't know if you know who Barbara Corcoran is. She was a real estate mogul in New York. She's now on Shark Tank and a few other TV shows. But she borrowed $1,000 from her boyfriend way back when and built this company that she sold for almost $70 million. And one of the things that she contributes or attributes to her success is playfulness. She said that she could bring people to a boardroom table or take them out for dinner to do a brainstorming session. And they'd get some ideas. But if she took them sailing for the day or away for the weekend for a pajama party, they came back with tons and tons of ideas. So talk to me about what you mean by playfulness and why it's important that Edgewalkers retain that sense of playfulness.
Well, what playfulness does, Vicki, is it fuels, one of the things it does is it fuels creativity. So when you tell me about Barbara, I'm not surprised because I often bring executives and leaders and business owners. I'm a big nature person, so I bring people out to Hawaii or to the Rocky Mountains or to Florida. I like to get people out of buildings, seriously, into nature, bring them on vision quests, have them move, have them play. I mean, it sounds crazy, but one time I worked with a bunch of leaders one day, and I had them, those big bubbles, I actually had them blow bubbles and envision their dreams these bubbles. Yeah. It sounds crazy. And you should, I've had people sing and dance at the end of a conference and start to move, and instead of, you know, ending, wrapping up a thing with a talk, I did it with a song. It accesses different levels of learning in the brain and the body and our consciousness that we normally don't do when we're just sitting talking about things or being intellectual. So in even being in nature, people step away. It's like a shape shift.
Yes.
They can access a different level of creativity, which comes up with different solutions. They're in their bodies. They're tuning into nature. They're getting different messages intuitively with their eyesight, with their senses. That is far more expansive than if they just do it the old way.
Yes, and I, for me,
and it's uncomfortable for a lot of people, but a lot of us forget that we need to play.
Yeah, and I think nature is very powerful. And you know, just there's something about feeling the wind in your hair, or the sun on your face, or even the rain that is very meditative for me as a writer myself. I can be stuck on something and just step away from it for a couple of hours to go walk outside, and suddenly everything comes clear.
No, it's very, very true. It's important that we need, I call it a bit of a shape shift. That's what I call it, is to change our environment to access the freedom of playfulness and to get our creativity flowing so we can come up with different ideas.
Yes, yeah. Do you ever get stuck yourself as an edge walker? You're out there, you know, motivating so many other people and inspiring so many other people. Do you ever get stuck yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I'm in a big growth phase right now. And I've had to put my own coaching hat on for myself, which is not always, for many of us, we can help other people, but it's hard to do for ourselves, because I feel that I'm up against some of my own edges in terms of, you know, being more vulnerable, dropping, you know, I feel like I'm being asked to step out and evolve at a level that I never have before as well with my work, you know, wanting to work on a much more, I mean, I work globally a lot, but wanting to work more expansively with more influential leaders. And so in order for me to do that with integrity and with integration, I have to go through my own process of growth and integration and expanding who I know that I can be and stepping out of, you know, my own box. We're all so much bigger than we think we are. And
yes.
I don't mean our egos. All of us are far more magnificent and expansive in our expression than we can even imagine.
Yeah.
And I know when I ask, you know, to be on my own spiritual journey and my life journey, to show me what's next, where can I best be used in the world, who can I serve, it's like, okay, if you want to do this, look at this belief, look at where you're holding yourself back, look at where maybe you're playing small. And that is not an easy place to be with ourselves. And, you know, and I find that the clients I work with often will come after I've done a lot of the inner work myself, because in order to be in sincerity and in integrity with that, it's a place that I need to show up in first. And then we can attract, or I can attract, the clients that I can work with at that level.
Right. And wasn't it Nelson Mandela who said, we're not really afraid of, you know, what we're really afraid of is how big we could be.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, the times we're in are asking all of us to step out of our smallness.
Yes.
The world needs us to be brighter.
You talk about self-leadership as being one of the most important aspects of personal development. And I would agree with you on that. I think self-leadership is key to expansion. Tell me what you mean by self-leadership.
Well, some of what we've been talking about is that, you know, and I see this with leaders, but it's, you know, I've worked a lot with leaders, and I focus not on leading other people, but first on leading themselves. Because the person in the mirror, you know, again, the integrity, the integration, the edgewalker qualities of what is your level of self-awareness. You know, how do you navigate in your own life through change and transition? Are you adaptable to changes? Are you a responsive person versus someone who reacts? You know, all of these qualities of where is your passion? Are you expressing that? Can you be playful? Are you a visionary in your own life? We cannot give to others what we do not have in ourselves.
Yeah.
So self-leadership is a term of almost like I call a mastery term, where we have the relationship with ourselves, where we can lead ourselves in our own truth, so that when we go out, whether we're, you know, raising our children, or you know, if you're a teacher or a government leader or a business owner, whatever it is, this is also where the integration comes in, where when we're leading ourselves with all of those qualities, it's much easier to show up and model that for other people.
Great advice. Great talking with you today. Patricia, a final thought that you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
I would say I invite each one of you to identify maybe one limiting belief and that is holding you back, and replacing it with one a positive action step that you can do to make your life better. So I think it would be identifying something that may be holding yourself back, and then replacing it with a belief or something, or an action step that may be something you've always wanted to do, and having the courage to do that.
Excellent. I'm going to do that myself later on
today.
Patricia Varley, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate it.
All right, Vicki. It was great talking to you and your listeners, and all the best.
Thank you. And you can find out more about Patricia at her website, patriciavarley.com. And if you missed any of that, you will be able to catch the podcast. It will be up by tomorrow. Please do stay with us when we come back. We're going to talk about Sisters of Fortune with my next guest. It's described as a real-life Jane Austen story. Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, developmental neurobiologist Dr. Paul Patterson shares important new information on how the immune system influences behavior and how it can impact mental illness, including autism, schizophrenia, and depression. See conversationslive.net for more information and tune in Monday at noon Pacific time.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicki at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Get current weather, traffic, and news. Visit 1150kknw.com and stay informed with Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and we're in our last segment right now, and we are talking with Jehan Wake. She's an author, a historian. She graduated from Oxford University, and she's the author of the biographies Princess Louise, somebody we don't hear very much about. She was Queen Victoria's unconventional daughter, The History of Two Families in Banking, and this new book, Sisters of Fortune, America's Caton Sisters at Home and Abroad. This is a really interesting read. It's been described as a real-life Jane Austen story. The New York Times Book Review describes this book as a truly remarkable accomplishment, tracing the filmy threads of women's influence in high society on both sides of the Atlantic through more than six decades. Jehan Wake, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Vicki. I'm delighted to be with you.
And of course, you're a fellow countryman. Nice to talk to
nice
a fellow.
Nice to hear an English voice, yes. A long way away, though.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit, first of all, about your background. I read that you'd always loved history and biography. Your name, Jahan, I heard, had a strong historical connotation because Joan of Arc was originally spelt as Jahan d'Arc.
I know. I always like to think that that's what led me to be so fascinated by history. And especially my favorite period, which is the Regency period, culled in the beginning entirely, I might add, from Georgette Heyer's wonderful, wonderful novels.
Oh, cool. And you had an international upbringing too. Your father was a diplomat, an oil executive. You went to Oxford University, Lady Margaret Hall. You read politics, philosophy, and economics. And then you become a trailblazer yourself. You're one of the first women, female graduate investment bankers in the City of London.
Yes, I know. I was almost like a guinea pig because when the banks were all trying to be good and employ lots of women. And I think up to then, of course, there had been women in working in banks, but not really in what we call today investment banks. So I was very interested in international studies, and I thought that this somehow was connected and that I would learn all about the world by joining an investment bank. It was a bit different then to now, and there weren't very many women then. So it was rather a baptism of fire, I'd say.
Right. But this all led to where you are now, because I read then you transferred to New York. You became enthralled with American history. Then you had to go back to London for surgery, and you worked as a historical researcher, which led to your first book on Princess Louise.
That's right, yes. I found that perhaps it was all the shouting they did in those days on trading floors, but my hearing suffered.
Right.
And I went home and had some operations, and of course I couldn't really hear in between times. So one of the best places to be, really, was a library where, you know, it was all silent around. No one could talk. And I started reading, and I helped a friend who was looking into Victorian royalty, and that's what led me to discover this amazing, really forgotten princess who was incredibly modern for her times.
Right.
I mean, she loved sculpturing, and that was considered by Queen Victoria, her mother, a decidedly unfeminine accomplishment for one of her own daughters to be interested in. Imagine being stuck in a studio with men.
Well, yes, definitely. Things were very different. The BBC approached you. They asked you to talk about how rich women historically managed their money. And then that led to this book, Sisters of Fortune, which is so fascinating. Tell us how that came about.
Yes, you're right. I went along to find out whether the traditional accounts of women's knowledge of money or connection with money, it was made out to be. And I discovered in Barings Bank archives in the city that these wonderful letters written by someone called E. Caton. And the first line of one of them read, "I have an inspiration for Buenos Aires bonds. I must have some." And, you know, it was like someone talking about, you know, a dress they had to buy or a pair of shoes they loved. And I thought, what man writing to his bank manager in the 19th century would talk like that, would write like that? This has to be written by a woman. And indeed, it turned out to be that E. Caton turned out to be Elizabeth Caton, my best of my book, who was very clever with money and was also the sort of money maker for her family, her three other sisters. And this just opened, you know, Vicky, a whole new world of women's relationship with money, something that traditional accounts thought they didn't really have. It didn't exist.
Yeah, it was quite fascinating to me because I was not familiar with the sisters. I understand they were raised by their grandfather. And, you know, unlike most grandfathers in those days or most parents in those days, he encouraged the girls. He didn't just encourage them. He really expected them to get an education and to be financially independent, because that was really quite frowned upon in most of the society back then, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And especially for, I think, women born into rich families, you know, heiresses who were supposed to just be educated in the feminine accomplishments and to then marry dynastically. And Charles Carroll of Carrollton brought up his daughters, well, and indeed especially his granddaughters, to know about money, to be well-read. Voltaire was a family favourite. They learnt Latin. He was very conscious of the importance of an education to women. And he felt that this would sort of guide them through life, give them a better opportunity. And that was very unusual. I mean, we're talking about the late 18th and early 19th century.
Right, right. I love that it's described, the book is described as a portrait of love between sisters and of Anglo-American relations through nearly a century. But it's also a most unusual story of money, of the power it gave these women, particularly over the men in their lives. And they were quite controversial there, because one didn't marry till she was what would have been considered middle-aged back then. Another sister married a man 5 years younger than herself, which, again, back then was something that was not done. So they're really quite fascinating people.
Well, they were trailblazers in that regard, that they were allowed to choose the men they married. And, you know, Bess, who didn't marry till she was, as you say, middle-aged, she was nearly 40. But she had said all along, I'm only ever going to marry for love. And she had lots of suitors, could never make her mind up, and didn't end up to marrying really very late.
She played the field.
And then she married a widower with 12 children.
a
ready-made family. I know. And as you say, Louisa, the third sister, her second husband, Carr, who was the heir to the dukedom, was younger than her. And that was also unusual. Men married much younger women, but not the other way around. But they were very independent, and they'd been brought up to be independent-minded.
Well, it is a fascinating story. I'm wondering how long it took. I read that you said it was like putting a jigsaw puzzle together. You drew diagrams of all of the people involved and then went back and traced all their history. Most of the book was taken from letters that were, you know, fairly private. How long did it take you to put this together?
It took about nearly 5 years all told, and it was actually really very fascinating. I mean, it sped by in time.
Right. There are some beautiful pictures in here too, portraits. And we're almost at the end of our segment, so I have to ask you very quickly what you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Jahan.
Just that women actually did do a lot of the things that we do today back then. And we just, I think, probably not realised it. But, you know, they also had tremendous fun. They loved fashions and going to parties and dances. But they also had this other serious side to them. And I think that this gives us this wonderful feeling of continuity with women in the early federal period.
Well, I think you did an amazing job. Well done. And I wish you all the best with this and look forward to seeing what's coming next.
Thank you so much, Vicky. It's been lovely being with you this afternoon.
And you too. And my guest there, Jahan Wake, and she's written several books, but the book we were just talking about is a true story of Sisters of Fortune is what it's called. America's Cajun Sisters at Home and Abroad. It's a great read, especially if you really love history and you know, the empowerment of women. It is a very good read. Well, we're at the end of our show today, so I want to thank you for being with us. We'll be back next week with an all-new live show. And if you have feedback on today's show or questions, you can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617, or email at info@conversationslive.net. See you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.